Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Thursday, Souls listeners. This is Sardi, and I'm hoping that you are having a great Thursday. This evening, we will have the lovely Linda Williams, MSW, talking about her book, Whose Apple Is It Anyway? We are awaiting Linda to join us on the call.
Hello.
Hey. Hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Who is this?
This is Linda.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I would be so great if my daughter's school could actually do something on time. I am sitting here at the train station awaiting her arrival from Raleigh.
Okay, how much later do you think they'll be? Because I'm thinking that we need to just reschedule this.
Oh, no, man, we're live right now.
Oh, get out of Dodge. Okay.
Modern technology. Oh, wait, okay, I can do this. So we are going to go ahead and chat it up about this book, Whose Apple Is It Anyway?
Okay.
So tell us about Linda Williams, MSW.
Well, I am a federal government employee, but all of my education is in social work and psychotherapy. I, along the way, became interested in ex-offender rehabilitation. And then, as I've said many times, destiny doesn't look the way you think it will. So here I am on a different track with respect to this book. My whole issue with respect to what the book is about, Whose Apple Is It Anyway? Empowering Purpose to Achieve Your God-Ordained Destiny is the subtitle. I just think that there's so many people in the church that are getting lost. When you come into any situation with extensive trauma in your background and you're caught up in the perpetual repercussions from that, quite often it's going to take more than an emotional experience in the church, or what we're saying now is the big cliche is declaring and decreeing something. You have got to address that kind of thing in your humanity as well as spiritually. So Whose Apple Is It Anyway is all about how to not throw out the baby of multiple decades of sound behavioral science in the interest of the water, which is the spirit. So we need a good balance of both sound behavioral science to address our humanities connected with the spirituality that we've been experiencing in the church. And I've observed, and it took me 7 years to write this book, but just in the last couple of years, I've noticed that people like T.D. Jakes and even some preachers that I hear on Moody Bible are really moving toward not poo-pooing psychology and the fact that sometimes people have physiological issues going on in their brains that you can't just pray away. Not telling people who have problems with depression that it's just the devil. Not telling people who have substance abuse issues that they're weak, that they don't have enough faith because they can't seem to not fall back into that. I got a little bit threadbare with all of that. I dedicate the book to Whitney Houston and a young lady named Deb Foran, who on my Facebook page you can see her entire testimony. Who, when you see her doing this testimony, she looks so healthy, and she looks just so well, and she sounds so excited about the Lord. She even had a position in the church. She was the church secretary. She was a prophet in the church. And the last I heard around 2000 was that she went back into the life and died in it. And people like Whitney Houston, who, she had a profound gift from God. I say in the book that only the heart and the hands of God could have crafted the voice that came out of that woman. Yet and still, whatever it was that fueled her very public challenges in her personal life, she never spoke of publicly. But there was clearly something there that wasn't connecting, because look what happened. So my whole issue and my whole purpose is to help people to understand some of the dynamics of being a human being in this earth, and where the spiritual aspect comes in. You can't move through that kind of healing absent God Almighty. But at the same time, to understand, I believe that if you educate people as to certain matters, whether it's a social, economic, social, political issue, or what it might be, I believe that education is empowering. And this book is a fine balance between the human dynamic and the spiritual. It's founded in the Word of God, spiritual laws, His healing and His power, but at the same time, it's explaining how come some of these things perpetuate in our lives.
And I love the power in your voice and the compassion that you have. I too am an MSW, and I attempted several times to take that test, the LCSW exam. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it was about that exam. I just could not successfully get it. And I know where I live, people credit your knowledge as a social worker based on that exam. And that is not mm-hmm. the basis of what makes us a great social worker.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. I haven't even attempted to take the test, so I'll give you some dadgum kudos because you even tried it, okay? I'm looking at the dang thing thinking, oh, my goodness gracious, now what? Because I slept getting grandfathered in some kind of way. It got all mixed up. Well, but see, what you're saying is on the flip side of that, okay, is, you know, I was always told that I would be good at business. And so there was an opportunity that opened up at Calvin College where they had a night course. It was accelerated. And you would take this accelerated course and you would get your bachelor's in organizational leadership. So I did that because my husband at the time was always telling me you'd be good at business, good at business. I always was even interested in possibly being a lawyer. So I did that. But what happened as a result of that was a twist and turn that kind of realigned me with my purpose for being here. I wound up doing my undergrad thesis, which was a 15-month applied research project on recidivism, which is really a social thing, but it's so far from, like, the nutrition assistance programs, which is what I was doing. And God gave me the grace that they approved me doing it on something that was off topic from my current career. And that's what led me into a master's of social work. Well, now that that's led me in master's of social work, I haven't taken that test. But what it has done is that it gave me the background that I needed to fulfill this book, which was my purpose. This book was my purpose. And it's like you say, in the marketplace, if you don't have the credentials behind you, many people don't consider you qualified to speak on a matter. It doesn't matter if you were drugged through the gutter and came out smelling like roses. That matters little in the marketplace. You have got to have the credentials, those letters behind your name, for many to pay attention to you. So from that perspective, it is power. From the perspective of this book, it gave me the background I needed to make this massive connection between our spirituality and our humanity. When you think about it, Jesus Christ had to accomplish his mission in this earth in his humanity. He had to come down here in human body, in human form, walk this earth in human form in order to accomplish his purpose in this earth. We too must accomplish our purpose in this earth within our humanity. It's the way it's written. God wants it done like that. We cannot get around that. But what we do is, what it becomes, though, is we get these so-called breakthroughs in church, and when all of the emotional dust settles and we have to turn around, walk out those doors back into the mess that we live in, then there's no connection there. People aren't able to make the connection. You know, and then so what we wind up is in a cycle of shame, guilt, not having enough faith. No, you're trying to deal with a human issue from a spiritual standpoint. Some things you just cannot lay hands on somebody and make it disappear. Some things you just cannot. Mm-hmm. Now, God is capable of doing that if he chooses to do that, but by a considerable measure, few of us have those experiences where somebody lays hands on us or we fall out in the spirit and we get up completely changed and none of that mess needs to be worked out in our souls. And for those larger body of people who don't have that experience and wondering, okay, well, I had this experience I had in church and was really real, so why am I still struggling with this Groundhog's Day grind of drama that keeps slapping me in the face? And what am I doing wrong? And the things that the connection to what's being done wrong is subversive. It's subconscious. It's about the unexpressed, unconscious expectations that are driven by the defense system that's bringing what we are intended subversively into our life as a crop, as opposed to our minds knowing we want better. We might even be willing to wait for better, but the wishing, the waiting, and wanting doesn't get it done. But the tools in this book, whose apple is it anyway, will get that done.
Now, what was the turning point to healing for you personally during the writing process of Whose Apple Is It Anyway?
Well, that's amazing that you asked that. I did a TV interview last night, and that question came up. My sister, when she predicted that I was going to write this book, it was December 17th, 2005, called me up and said, "You're going to write a book." That wasn't the first time I heard that. My mother had called me at my darkest hour on the phone, and she said, "Linda, this isn't about you. It's about all the people in the body of Christ who are going to be freed because of what you went through." So two people had predicted this over a course of about 18 years. But when my sister told me I was going to write this book, she said, "Linda, but the book will only progress to the extent that you heal." So this book, my healing was tied up in this book. So, for instance, I would reach these points where I just could not write. Okay, I just couldn't. I tried everything they said. If you're going to be a writer, then you have to, write every day, no matter what. I'm sorry. One instance was I had to admit a 30-year rape. Now, this has been so buried in me that, okay, I'm over that mess. Why are we still talking about it kind of thing? And one day I mentioned to my boyfriend that I had been raped. It was the first time that I ever expressed that completely, not cleaning it up, straight up the way it was. And he wound up telling me what I didn't know. My healing was tied up in this. You have to let that man own what he did to you. You can't blame yourself for that. You can't think that you deserve that, Linda, because you were naive and let that man in your house. You had no clue that he was a rapist. By revealing this full out, uncleaned up story to this guy, God used him to open my eyes to the fact that I had lived with self-loathing. I had become the wrong that was done to me. I really thought I deserved it. And with that awakening from that conversation, then I was able to move on writing. There were several points of very deep realization and very deep healing for me in the book. So when people ask me what was the turning point, I could never point to one instance, because it was a progression of peeling away layers, just like you do with an onion, just a progression. I was just a completely different person when I put the last dot and tittle on that book than I was when I wrote the first paragraph. And over a course of 7 years and 6 days, to be exact, I wrote that book. Now, I can't say that when I put the last dot until I was fully healed, because it's been 2 years since I wrote the last dot and tittle. There were still some things in my mind, some ways I was thinking that God had to deal with in order for me to finally come up to this point where it's been released. So to nail it down to one thing, I can give you that prime example of some of the healing levels I came through and let you know that there were many more.
And, you know, a lot of people don't respect, those that have been violated sexually. When I first went into the military, I too was raped. And at the time, I was engaged. So it was, I was 19. It was hard for me to realize that it was not indeed me, but for years, even after I got married, even after, you know, the domestic violence issues that I endured with my husband, for a long time, I thought it was indeed me. Everything, all the relationships after that, they messed up because of me and the fact that I had not healed. And, you know, I still believe that there are things now that make me cautious when it comes to a male, to where if I see a red flag, I have to, like, do an about face.
Okay, okay. Now, this is the deal. Like you said, it makes you cautious. See, there's a big difference between complete aversion, all right, and wisdom and caution. You see what I'm saying? You seem to be cautious as opposed to, like, me just hole up in the house and I ain't going to have no kind of relationships. Hole up in the house, don't want to see no man, nowhere, no how, no way. Feel me? And as we move to our healing, that we go from the aversion to the caution. Now, the way we leverage that in what happens is what the dynamic you're talking about in your life is because of those internal expectations. When you get hurt and take those blows in your soul, then there's kind of a crust that builds up. And, you know from your MSW that a lot of times what we target as maladaptive defense mechanisms were indeed beneficial to us at the beginning where the trauma occurred. And so as long as we learn the lesson that was to be drawn from that experience, wisely and rightly draw the line between your responsibility in that, which is probably begins and ends with our decisions to be in relationship with knuckleheads that can't do any better, okay, and what they did to you as a result of having that inroad. So we can't keep telling ourselves that we are the cause of that, the reason for that, because, girl, you've been there. I've been through the domestic violence. That's what they tell you. You're getting that beat in your head by the knucklehead that's beating you in the head. You know, it's your fault. You this, you that, and I wouldn't be this if it wasn't for you kind of mess. And when you're getting those kind of messages along with the physical and emotional blows and trauma, then that stuff kind of embeds itself in your spirit. Well, then when that embeds yourself in your spirit, then if we're not aware of it, then what it does is it completely morphs us out of the people we have to be in order to accomplish our God-ordained mission in this earth, because we have to be the people he created us to be, the people we came here, the character and personalities and the natural skills and abilities he put in us when he conceived us in his heart, which was before our parents even knew each other, to conceive us in reality. And so He creates us with that creative purpose in mind. Now, when he created us, we first existed in his heart, okay? Now, what we get is when we get here, every blow we take morphs us out of what God created us to be in our spirits, our character and our personalities get morphed out of what he created. And now we're walking around a morphed out, twisted up, halfway version of what we were when he created us, and thinking that that twisted up morphed thing is us, and it really isn't. It really isn't who we really are. And what the book does is it walks us through being able to root out the backstory, root out what's going on at the core of that thing, so that we can see what's driving the emotions that are causing us to behave the way that we're behaving. See, and it's out of that opening of our minds, that enlightenment, that learning, that becomes empowering, because from that perspective, then we become empowered to, okay, now I see what's causing this mess. I see what's up, down, deep in there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, everything that I went through in the past, all the lessons I learned, I'm going to bring them into the here and now, and I'm going to leverage those and let those lessons empower me instead of keep me a victim. And at the moment where you learn what's at the core of that thing, and you're able to really leverage all of that past toward your mission and your purpose, that's when the empowerment comes in. See, that's when you go from victim to victor.
And, you know, when I first heard you on So Real with Madeline, and I heard the title, Whose Apple Is It Anyway? I literally was like, does this have anything to do with, you know, Eve? Or what
Absolutely.
Exactly does the title mean? So where did the title come from?
Well, the title actually comes from, my writing coach told me to shorten the title of the book, said to do my research and come up with a concept, a catchy little theme. I found a story about Buddha where he was begging, and some guy was berating him about have sitting there begging. You need to work, you need to this, you need to that, and Buddha's acting like nothing ever happened. So, of course, like it happens when we don't let people get to us, then they really clown. So this guy just started really going at it all in Buddha's face, and Buddha finally looked up at him and pulled an apple out of his basket and said, if I give you this apple and you refuse to take it, then whose apple is it? Well, of course, it's your apple because I'm not taking it, blah, blah, blah. And Buddha just kindly looked at him and said, well, you're offering me insults and innuendo and all of that rot. I'm not taking it, so that's yours, not mine. You're asking me why I'm so calm is because that's your mess, not mine. And that's how I came up with whose apple is it. It does tie to the garden. Let's talk quickly. I don't know how much time we have, but let's talk quickly about when the serpent was trying to get Eve to eat that apple. He made it look like it was all about her. Oh, you this, don't you really want to know what God knows? You. And it wasn't about Eve. See, the backstory is what we're talking about here. His backstory was he's running rackets on God for getting booted the heck up out of heaven. He knows he's no match for God. So what he's going to do now is he's going to try to mess up the master plan by tripping us up. So that apple represented his rot, his rebellion, his retaliation. If Eve had known that it wasn't about her, that she was believing the lies he was telling her, she would have known that she did not have to ascribe to his rebellious retaliation, and she would have known not to take that apple. She shouldn't have taken that apple, and neither should we. By taking that apple and biting into it, what did she do? She traded her harvest, which was walking the destiny God created for them in the garden, for the certain serpent's harvest, which was getting booted the heck up out of there. She, in that moment when she took that apple, she traded his harvest for hers. Guess what? That wasn't all about Eve. It wasn't all about Eve when the serpent was trying to tell her it was all about Eve. It wasn't all about Eve when Adam was trying to blame her for it. It wasn't all about Eve at all. But the thing that's here that we have to know is that the apple wasn't the cause of the fall of man. Man was. It's not so much the so-called apple, and we know it wasn't really an apple. It could have been a turnip. It doesn't matter. What it represents is that wasn't even her apple to take. She was trying to take somebody else's harvest into hers, and she reaped a commensurate harvest. She traded her harvest for his. It's not about the apple. It's about their rebellion in that garden. So when, as you read through the book, you realize that the apple is situation, person, people, places, and things. It doesn't matter. It could be your past. It could be that rape I endured. It could be what you went through in the military. It could be what you went through in your marriage. It could be any of that stuff. Really, it's not about that stuff. That's the dadgum apple. See, it's how we respond to stuff in the face of that apple. Just like it was about how Adam and Eve responded to the opportunity to be rebellious and go against what God told them to do. I mean, let's think about it. There was a garden to eat. The Bible clearly says that the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was good for fruit and pleasing to the eye. There was nothing wrong with the fruit of that tree. But what we miss is that that tree stood in the middle of the garden just like the tree of life. Why? Because God gives us free choice. If he'd have put one tree in the middle of the thing, there wouldn't have been any dadgum choice. He wants us to have free will to either obey and get with the game plan or not. So he had the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Why did they eat from the tree of life? They both sitting there in the middle of the doggone garden. They could have done that. Serious business. We miss all of this, see? Okay? Now, let's take this to the here and now. Now, we know that they were hewn from the very destiny they walk. We know God created Adam and Eve from the ground that they walk, and they walk their destiny because God put them straight up smack dab in the middle of their destiny. That Garden of Eden was their destiny, right? Hewn from the ground they walked, okay? What was it in them that caused them to make those decisions. Now, couldn't have been much. Neither one of them had a messed up childhood, okay, to screw them up in the way they think. It was them and God. So what could they have gone through to cause them to make that mistake? Probably nothing. So my question to everybody with this book is, what is it in our humanity that predisposes us to making those decisions? What is it in our humanity that predisposes us to that kind of disobedience? What is it in our humanity that causes us not to see clearly at our crossroads? And then I follow it through with this. If Adam and Eve and their humanity had a propensity toward that, how much more of are we who go through crap in our lives and get twisted up predisposed to that? See what I'm saying? I mean, it's just so much in the book to even try to cover.
Now, I did hear you say that, you know, you feel like you found your purpose with the book. What other purposes do you feel that you have or that you behold, you know, other than the book itself? Because, you know, with the book comes motivational speaking. With the book comes, you know, being able to touch others and share your testimony. So do you feel that, you know, even though your path started with your MSW, do you feel that that's also what God's purpose is for you, and he had to take you through all of that trial and tribulation to get you where you needed to be?
I'm not going to even blame him for that mess, okay? See, that's what the book is all about. For my purpose, okay, see, God is not our cosmic bellhop. That's what I'm trying to make people see. God is not our cosmic magician where we can just spout some crap, live any way we want to, run from healing, and then blame him for everything we went through. What I learned from the process of healing was where my decisions took me off course, okay? How that anytime you make a decision that takes you down another path, or it's a decision of disobedience, then God never says that he erases the repercussions of those things, okay? So I'm saying that a lot of the dumb mistakes I made from not being healed and not seeing and not understanding the things in this book, I'm saying that God has graced me with breath still standing here enough to get what he told me about in this book, okay, and to learn how to leverage that going forward for my purpose. I'm saying that even when we're stuck on stupid, there are many opportunities. I talk about this in the book. We still can make the right moves. We can still be positioned to do certain things that are in obedience and along our path of purpose. Case in point, I had nightmares when I dropped out of school in 1979. I had nightmares for 15 years about getting to school late, running down the hall, can't find the classroom, missing a test. When I finally got in here and took this accelerated course I told you about, they shut that course down the minute I graduated. That was a door that would have slammed in my face if I hadn't moved when God led me to move. So I'm saying that when we do step into obedience and take the steps as he guides us, that helps us along too. So the stuff that I did, stuck on stupid, repercussions were mine. God's grace got me still here enough to listen up and learn, okay? And if I learned anything from this book, it's that, heck, I don't know what the heck else is out there, what he wants me to do. I made the mistake for the last 2 years of thinking I wasn't going to self-publish this book. And it took him slapping those ashes off my head for me to wake up and say, okay, one day I'm going to learn not to tell God what I am and ain't going to do. And I had to learn that the hard way. So 2 years of this 9-year journey were because I was still stuck on stupid. You know what? I'm not excited about getting out there. I'm going to lie to you. I'm not excited about being out there traveling all the time. Girl, I'm still holed up in my house. And I'm happy holed up in my house. But I have learned I'm going to do what God tell me to do. And so you know what, girl? I don't know where he's leading me. But that's the excitement of the journey. That's the excitement of the journey. I never thought I'd write a book. I had no inclination. It was not on my bucket list that I got to write a book before I die. Please, girl, I'm going to tell you, none of this was on my list. Go ahead.
you definitely have to loose it and let it go. But again, it's not an easy task.
Nope.
I do want to give listeners the opportunity, though, before we close out the show, to get information on how they can locate you, how they can get information on the book, how they can book you, if that's their desire.
Okay. Yeah, it's all at whosapple.org. That's WHOSEAPPLE.org, whosapple.org. All of the links to buy the books. Please join my mailing list. If you want me to speak, go to our contact tab. Girl, it's a one-stop shop. You'll see everything, the book trailer, right there at my website. Feel free to join. I just hate that our time is up, girl. We're just getting started.
And that is okay, because what I would love to do, if you would agree to it, is actually have you back on next week, if at all possible, because I feel that not only with your book title, just your words alone could be the way of saving somebody that has them have the same feelings. Oh, I'm
yes.
stuck in this mindset of
yes.
I can't get out. I can't get away.
Yes.
You know, it may be someone
yes.
that may listen to the playback and be like, wait a minute, I'm in this relationship that it may not be the same thing as what you and I went through, but it's still the mental issues, the mental tearing that affected me. So I need someone to guide me through this.
Right, right. And I'm more than happy to adjust my schedule where necessary to do this, because what I would like to do is, with you having the same credentials that I have, I'd really like for us both to kind of tag team this thing, girl, because I really feel, too, that there's a lot of people out there that need to hear the full story, and it's just not going to happen in a little short 30 minutes. You let me know when you need me, and if at all possible, I will be there for you.
Well, let's talk about it. You know, if you're available next Thursday, we can actually, you know, do a couple weeks of a series, the Linda
okay.
Williams MSW series for a couple weeks.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yep. I'm checking my schedule. I'm so glad that you decided to go ahead and do this, because I know you got some challenges on that end. This has been I'm so excited.
You know, the devil puts challenges in our ways all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still such a baby, and I'm not afraid to say it publicly. I'm still such a baby with the radio blog, but with the help of Faith A. Believer, Madeline Bass, Vanessa Richardson, you know, I was able to find something that not only blessed me, but allowed me to bless others. So regardless
right.
of the technical difficulties, if I can do it, I can be in the middle of an altercation. If I can get on my phone and my tablet, then Souls
hey.
Is going to air every Thursday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard
I
Time.
I love it in you. 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 Yes, I'm free for the next two Thursdays, so we can get that done.
All right, Souls listeners, if you are indeed listening, you can tune in not only next Thursday, but the Thursday after that, and you will get the opportunity to hear more empowering words of Linda Williams, MSW, the author of Whose Apple Is It Anyway? So is there anything else you would like to close out with, Linda, before we close out the show?
Yeah, I just want to encourage everybody that there's nothing in your life that's lost, that, you know, there's nothing lost. And I'm just looking forward to talking to everybody to teach them how to leverage that and flip the script on victimization to become the victor. And you're a natural at this, girlfriend.
Oh, thank you so much. And you have been a blessing to me. You know, I do plan on, unfortunately, paying another $300 for this licensure exam, because I fully believe that I can do so much more, unfortunately, in the state that I live in with it. And it is because of queens like yourself that gives me that push. You said 1978, and I was in the world for possibly 2 years. So you've got a story that I need to hear in my, to me, I'm an old young person. There are others that need to hear your story. And so we're going to continue this on, and hopefully we touch and change lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No doubt.
So I will definitely thank you and bid you adieu. Thank you so much for being on the Soul's Block Talk radio show. You can listen back at www.blogtalkradio#souls. You can also find me on Facebook, Twitter, as well as Instagram and WordPress. Thank you so much, Linda.
Yes, I'm looking forward to our next get-together. You be blessed here.
You too. Have a great evening.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.